Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to my home here live in Houston, Texas. I personally think the most awesome city in the world, no doubt about it. You can look out my window and tell that it is pretty dark out there, but you can't tell how cold it is. It is freezing cold here. It's going to have one of those weeks where we just go up and down. I tell you what, I'm ready for spring and summer in Houston, where it's back up into the 90s and 100s, because this 40s and 50s, I don't do very well. But welcome to the program tonight. You're going to love this program. This is going to be one of those that you want to get online right now. Text a friend, email somebody and say, hey, make sure you listen to the show tonight. And you want to get a notepad and a pen, because we're going to have some information that you're going to be able to use with your teenager. So I want to make sure that if you want to find out more information about that, listen in, because we're going to just bring on a guest that has written an awesome book and give you an opportunity and tell you how you can get a hold of that. But we have him the entire hour. I'm not going to try to thrill you with my brilliance this evening with a free 5 or 10 minute prelude. I'm not going to do that. We're going to jump right into the program. But before we do, I just want to let you know there's several ways to do that. We are live on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. You can get on there and comment, or you can text me at my personal phone, 832-396-6525, and I will read your question or comment. Or better yet, you can call right in to TJ at the awesome BBS radio station at 888-627-6008, and that's going to end up getting you right here, and we'll just patch you right on through. And the guest tonight has agreed and is anticipating at least getting one or two calls. So hopefully we'll get those calls. But if you have a question or a comment about your child, about your grandchild, about your great-grandchild, or about parenting, wondering about you personally, hey, how should I handle this situation? You're going to have one of the leading experts in our country on right here, right now. The next few weeks, we have some great guests coming up. Dave Pelzer was supposed to be on last week, but they were having floods in California. We have rescheduled him, and we're going to get him back on the program next week. Next few weeks, we're going to have Marlena on, that has written this book. We have some other great guests that's coming on pretty shortly. So don't forget to hang with us. And like we say every week, if you give us 45 minutes of your time, we promise you that you're going to be able to use the information that we give you, not to just discard, but to be able to apply to your life sometime this week. And tonight's guest is no exception to that promise. If I'm lying, I'm dying. And he is the author of The Life Guide for Teens, Dr. Ron Anbar, MD, FAAP, is board certified not only in one, but two specialties in both pediatric pulmonology and general pediatrics. He offers counseling. He offers hypnosis services at the Center Point Medicine in La Jolla, California, which is where he resides, and in Syracuse, New York. And Dr. Anbar is the author of the acclaimed Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, A Journey to the Center, as well as a regular columnist, listen to this, for Psychology Today, which we all read that, I think, online. And he's the founder of Center Point Medicine, serving the mission of making mental health care more accessible for children. And I'll tell you what, that's what we're going to be talking about. I have read this book from cover to cover, and I have highlighted and circled things, and we're going to talk about that tonight. So welcome to the program, Dr. Ron Onbar. Ron, come on in, doctor. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great having you, and it's wonderful to have you from the great state of California, and I hope and pray that everything is going well for you out there and all the family and the friends and neighbors that you have out there in your neighborhood.
Well, we've been blessed with a lot of rain recently, so the fires have mostly been put out.
Yeah. Well, welcome. I tell you, Doctor, I know you have a lot of different specialties and a lot of different interests, but tell me right up front, I have no questions written down, but right up front, what is your passion for wanting to help teenagers out? Where did that come from? Why do you have a desire? What do you see that we need in our society right now for you to write a book called The Life Guide for Teens? Tell me what's inside that brain of yours.
Well, I'm a pediatrician, so I care for children. I've done that my entire career. And I became a pediatrician because when you make a difference in the life of a child, you make a difference for a lifetime. And teenagers in today's world have really faced a lot of challenges that weren't there 30, 40 years ago when I started in medicine. I tell the kids, you know, I used to work when the internet wasn't around. And the internet has made such a big change, probably worse than better, actually, for teens, because they, with the advent of the smartphone, they're on the electronics much of the day. And that's really changed the lives of teens. First of all, they see things that they would never have seen before. For example, if there's a school shooting somewhere, everybody hears about it right away, 24/7. When 40 years ago, if there's a school shooting somewhere, unless you watch the evening news, you're oblivious to it. Or a police brutality incident. Now everybody hears about it. And teens grew up in a world where it seems like there's badness everywhere. It's not. There's the same amount of badness as there always was, but we hear about it and hear about it again and again. That adds a lot of stress to teens' lives. Then with social media, kids are seeing unrealistic things that they think are real. They're seeing kids post amazing success stories and don't realize, well, that's just a very rare occasion. They think everybody should be as successful all the time, adding pressure. And then they text each other, and the phone is their way they socialize. And they stay up at night sneaking their phone and losing sleep in order to socialize. And that creates a whole host of problems. Lack of sleep is known to cause anxiety, depression, suicidality, all these things that have increased in teens. People saying, why is there so much mental health issues in kids these days? One in three teens is anxious clinically. One in four is depressed. One in three has contemplated suicide. These are horrible numbers. Why is it happening? I think much of it is the pressures kids live under in this high information kind of environment.
Do you feel that their sleep is being interrupted by this wonderful communication tool that is awesome in one way, but the most horrendous thing in a child's life in another? Do you think they're up all night playing on this or being vibrated in the middle of the night by some text or something like that?
Absolutely. You know, you asked me why I wrote the book, because I want to get the word out to teens that they can take control of their lives. A lot of teens feel like I can't control things. I can't control what my friends do. I can't control what happens to me in school. They feel powerless. So one of the things about this book, The Life Guide for Teens, is it tells kids, hey, you're the power within you to deal with many of these issues. So with sleep, absolutely. So first of all, having the electronic in your room is disturbing, even if you don't pick it up, because when it vibrates, it might disturb your sleep. Or if you get a text in the middle of the night from a friend, you're tempted to answer it, and then you might get into conversations. And teens are clearly losing sleep. Do you know how many hours a night a teen should sleep? Do you know the answer to that? It's
No, I don't.
ideally 8 to 10 hours, 8 to 10 hours. The average teen sleeps 6 to 7 hours. What does that mean? They're in sleep deficit by an hour or two a night, and that is cumulative. And so they act like zombies in the morning. They can't even think. They go to school and don't learn much, and then they're tired and irritable. A lot of the stuff parents complain about with their teens is because their teen is just not feeling up to snuff.
So, as a medical professional, when you are missing out on 20% of what you should be sleeping and you're not gaining that, what are some of the side effects of that that you see in your patients? And parents need to know right now, hey, wait, you may want to be your kid's best friend, but that's not your role in life. Your role in life is to be the protector and helper of your child. So what are some of the physical and mental effects of missing out over a long period of time of that 6 hours when it ought to be 8 to 10 hours of sleep?
Well, so we already mentioned anxiety and depression. ADHD is much worse when you haven't slept. Irritability, getting into fights with other kids or with the parents, which of course makes you lose even more sleep, is a problem. And as far as health problems, if you have a health condition, that's going to be worse with poor sleep. If you have poor sleep leads to poor immune function, so you're more prone to infections. You're more prone to being out of school because of colds. There's so many things that poor sleep causes. And I think if we corrected our sleep problem with our teens, which is easier said than done, a lot of teen mental and physical health problems would improve a great deal.
When you have a child, a young teen in your office and you're talking to the parents, do you ever recommend, hey, have a rule in your home that this goes on the charger in the kitchen with mom and dad's phone on the charger in the kitchen every night before you go to bed and you can pick it up after breakfast in the morning? Do you recommend have guidelines like that for them? Or is it one of those things that, hey, this problem's too hard to overcome, they're going to do it anyway?
No, I absolutely recommend that the phone stay out of the child's room, but I do it with the child's assent. I always ask the child's permission. Because if
Yeah.
the child's not with it, they're going to just sneak the phone somehow or other, or they're going to use their iPad instead of their phone. So I will review with the child why sleep is important. Sometimes the children won't accept that, but more often than not, they say that makes sense to them and are actually willing, especially the younger kids who have a hard time controlling their impulses. They're willing to let the parent have the phone for the night because they understand the importance of it.
When you were saddling your mental horse to write this book, I noticed right out of that starting gate, you let the teenager know there's some phrases that you can use that will benefit, fuel, give you positive affirmation. I can, I wish, I will. How important do we need to instill that in our children today? And is that something that you see is maybe lacking with our parenting skills right now?
Yes, yeah, so the words we use for ourselves and the words we use with our children have a big impact on
Yeah.
ourselves and our children. A simple way of thinking about it is our brain is a computer. So what you feed it is what you get. So if you say, I can't do something, the brain says, fine, you can't do it. If you say, I want to do it or I can do it, the brain says, fine, how are we going to get there? So in the words you use, it dictates how you'll react. If you have a test tomorrow and say, oh, I'm going to fail it, the brain says, yep, you'll fail it, and you might quit even trying. Or if, on the other hand, you say, I want to do well on my test, the brain says, okay, how are we going to get there? We're going to focus, we're going to study, and we're going to keep calm during the test. So what we tell ourselves sinks in. What parents tell their children also sinks in. So a child that doesn't do their homework and the parent says, oh, you're lazy. The child hears, yep, I'm lazy, and that doesn't change. What the parent might say instead is, you can do better. I believe in you. And when you study, you'll do better in school. And that plants different kind of thoughts. And the child will say, okay, I'll do that. So you want to be very mindful as the parents of how you talk to your children. And if you're a teenager listening to this, you need to be mindful of how you talk to yourself. Most people who are anxious are negative with themselves. They're anxious because they think of all the bad things that might occur to them. That's negative thinking. So what I will teach such children is to tell themselves, well, I want to be safe. I want things to be well for me. And that's what they focus on. We really do manifest our own reality. If we use positive thoughts with ourselves, you manifest a positive reality. And the funny thing is, if you're a pessimist and you say, oh, things are going to work out, and then they don't work out, you'll say, see, I was right. They're not going to work out. I'm always right. But they didn't realize they caused it.
So, I mean, we're not just saying positive attitude will change your life. There's medical research that undergrounds and foundationally proves this, that if you just fill yourself with positive affirmations, thought processes, it will tend to help you lean that direction. Or
Yes,
is
there's
this
medical.
medically sound to where, hey, wait, it can actually make a huge impact?
Yes, there's medical evidence that a positive attitude is associated with improved health outcome, both physical and mental. And I'll tell you, Dr. Williams, it's even more important in older age. For our older folks, we know that people who are optimistic, who are positive attitude, they live years and years longer than people who are negative. It
Okay, so
affects
now
life.
go ahead, go ahead.
No, it affects you, your life expectancy. Positive attitude. Let me tell you, I have five keys. We talked about sleep and attitude. There are five keys to having a good life, which works for teens and works all the way to late adulthood. Let me just go through them real quick so we don't
Okay.
forget. Sleep is one. Exercise, so important. At least half an hour of aerobic exercise five times a week. Really important because exercise is not only good physically, but also mentally. A good diet, a balanced diet with all the nutrition you need is important. A social life. Social life is another important key to longevity when you're older and to happiness when you're younger. And then finally, having a sense of purpose is such an
Ooh.
important key to having a good life. So this is why teens are trying to figure out their purpose, and sometimes they don't know yet, which is fine. They're young. And I tell them you can start just being kind to one another. That's a purpose, and you can go and live your life and be kind to your friends and yourself. For older people, we know if you retire and have no purpose, again, that's life shortening. So
Yeah.
have a purpose. Have something to do that's important to you to help you live a long life.
So how do we handle this, doctor? Because, obviously this show has been designed on trying to help people that have gone through a horrific type of hurt, pain, abuse, trauma, from sexual to emotional to neglect. What happens to these five keys when something comes in and disrupts all of these with a traumatic event? How do we, you being a medical professional, say, hey, wait, we're going to have to repackage this and rework this into this child? What's some of the things that a parent needs to hear, and you as a doctor would give advice on when they have experienced a huge speed bump event that disrupts all of these keys?
So first, to understand there's always a way forward. Even if it's a horrible event, there's always a way forward.
Okay.
And the way forward involves, and especially with older kids, is empowering the kids. But even with younger kids, you just use different techniques. You want to empower the individual to grow beyond the trauma. You don't want to be stuck in the trauma for any longer than you need to be there. So the way we empower kids, you mentioned positive self-talk. That's like step one. Step two that I teach is emotional self-regulation. You can be in control of your emotions by focusing on not only positive thoughts, but positive, helpful imagery. We teach kids to imagine a safe, calm place and learn to trigger that same relaxation response they achieve with that imagery just by making a simple gesture, like making a fist or crossing their fingers. And they tell themselves, when I make that gesture, I can become this calm, even when I'm not imagining to be in a safe place. That's a simple way of regulating emotion. It will calm you down in
Now, is
most
that a brain
instances.
trick?
Sure, you can call it a brain trick, but it also involves the mind, excuse me, the body, because mind and body are connected. So when
Right.
you imagine being in a safe place, your body calms down, your heart rate goes down, your blood
So
pressure
you're
goes down.
shifting that thought process from this horrific event to this safe place.
Right. Or if you have a minor thing that's irritating you, you can stay calm. But for a traumatic event, it would be more complex. So the next step I teach kids is how to get in touch with their inner self, their
Ooh.
subconscious. And the beauty of the subconscious is that it can verbalize things that you may not be able to verbalize consciously, or you try to avoid consciously. Many people who've undergone traumatic events or are very anxious don't want to talk about such things because it's painful. And yet, to recover, it's sometimes important to process through these events so you can figure out what good came out of the event. Even a traumatic event, there's some good. For example, you survived. It shows you are resilient. Maybe you found out certain people loved you, that helped you through the trauma. So you learn to focus on those parts of the event, and then you can learn to let go of the bad parts because they're no longer useful to you. But to do that, you have to be able to examine the event, and the subconscious can help do that oftentimes in an easier way than if you're just talking about it consciously.
So, is there a emotionally mental delete button that we can get to that can help us erase those things that our mom and dad said about us or something that's happened to us in this inner self when we actually embrace that and get in touch with that?
I don't think it's easy as erasing, but there are mental ways of countering it. So if you have a negative voice in your head that belonged to one of your parents, you can learn to speak back to it or tell yourself, I am now in control. I no longer need to listen or pay attention to that voice or the traumatic event. But again, as I mentioned earlier, even a traumatic event, there's often some good from it that you can take forward. Maybe you'll be more careful. There's, again, depending on the event. And so you want to take the sting out. So you want to be able to think about the trauma, not necessarily forget it, but in a way that you're no longer traumatized by it.
So, how do you convince a teenager that has gone through a traumatic event that we need to deal with this? We need to try to rid ourselves of this. Do you encourage journaling? Do you encourage some type of inner work that they can do as homework for themselves? What's some of the steps and techniques that you use that helps us deal with that and then hopefully file it away.
So journaling is one way. Certainly writing it down is helpful, so you don't have to keep it all in your head all the time and be able to get it out. I should put a caution here. I'm not a specialist in dealing with trauma. I counsel kids. I've treated patients who've had trauma, but there are actually psychotherapists whose
Right.
specialty is trauma. So I would say if you have a child who's really been traumatized, find a healthcare provider who does this day in, day out. But the questions you ask is yes, anything to externalize the thoughts is useful. You can imagine putting it in the traumatic thoughts in the treasure chest and closing it and knowing that you can go back to examine them later if you need to. That's an imagery way of dealing with trauma. Another way you could deal with trauma is to imagine on a theater screen and you're watching it from the theater. So you distance yourself by putting in a movie screen, you're distancing from trauma. And you could do things like change it from color to black and white. You can reduce its volume. You can even shrink the screen. Those are all metaphors to take control of the traumatic event and make it seem less real and less here and now. A lot of people who are traumatized, they act as if it's happening right now, even though it happened years ago. So you want to decrease the reality of it because it's not happening now, it's past.
With the anxiety portion, and you mentioned a while ago, and I'll ask you this question and we'll take a quick break. Do you think that today's children are being diagnosed with ADHD way too soon because there's a lot of commonalities of someone that has gone through trauma and has clinical or legitimate ADHD, and there's that common core that can switch between the two. How often, because it seems like with my three boys, which was 20, 30 years ago, ADHD, we were medicating our kids left and right. How do you determine if it's really ADHD or they have something in their background, in their past, that may be a common thread?
So again, I want to caution, I'm not an ADHD expert, although I treat kids with ADHD. I do think that it's diagnosed too quickly. Anybody who doesn't behave at school, the teacher says, oh, maybe you have ADHD, and the parent dutifully gets the diagnosis. But there's so many different di diagnoses that can have ADHD-like symptoms, including anxiety. You can be anxious and then not focus at school because you're so anxious. Or you can have a reading problem and dyslexia and not be able to focus on reading and be diagnosed with ADHD. Or you could be brilliant and be bored out of your mind in school and your behavior problem and be diagnosed with ADHD. Or you could have had trauma and you can't focus in the schoolwork, so you're bored as well. All these need to be taken into account. And so the knee-jerk reaction, oh, let's put him on a pill or her on a pill and fix this, is just wrong. This is true not just ADHD. It's like in medicine as a whole, I'm a pulmonologist. Any kid who has shortness of breath when they run, their pediatrician tends to diagnose asthma. Oh, you're out of breath, you must have asthma. But I can tell you as a pulmonologist, if a child was referred to me for exercise-induced asthma, it was only that 1 out of 10 times. 9 out of 10 times it was something else, most likely psychological. So I think
Wow.
this is true of the mental health as well. So make sure whoever's diagnosing you is taking good history and is aware of all these other possible diagnoses.
That's huge. We're gonna open that can of worms on the other side of this. And then I also want to, Doctor, after this short commercial break, I want to talk about the word you used a while ago, and we just kind of passed over real quick, resilience. Where's that at in those children? Or is it something they have to learn, or do they have to discover that they already have it within them? We're going to do that. 8886. Yeah, I told you that, folks, you're going to want to call in. You're going to want to write this stuff down because I have a whole page of notes already because there's so much wisdom here. If you want to get involved, 888-627-6008. And we promise we won't send you a doctor's bill if you just call and ask a question of this awesome doctor that has written the book, The Life Guide for Teens. We'll be right back in about a minute and 22 seconds. Hang with us.
Get ready for a life-changing journey from the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come. Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, learning how to turn life's pain into life's power and purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out, because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
All righty, welcome back. We just handed these all out the other day at the Lubbock School up in Lubbock, Texas, Embracing Your Scars. I'm getting wonderful feedback on that. But I tell you what, I don't want you to buy that. I want you to buy the book called The Life Guide for Teens by our guest tonight, Dr. Ambar. And Doctor, before we took our break, you mentioned something about resilience. And I want to know, what's your opinion? Because was it, I know it was, but I'm going to ask you and let you tell us why. Majority of your chapters, you start off with the line, you can control this. You can untie this. You can unknot this. You can overcome this. How important is that to affirm? Are you trying to create something that is inside of them that says, hey, wait, life hasn't handed me something too heavy yet. I can make it through whatever I'm going through. How important was that? And was that the game plan that you had when you laid out the book?
Yeah, that's key to successful life, is having resilience, having the confidence that you can handle things. So there are things you can do as a parent to help your child grow resilient, and then there are things that we can teach our children to help them. So we'll start with a child, with a teenager. Being resilient is learning to deal with your own issues in a good way. So rather than running away from a difficult homework assignment or hiding from a difficult social situation, we teach kids to focus on their homework, to go out socializing, and then give them tools that they can use to succeed in those arenas. And every time they succeed, they develop resilience. When I talked earlier about teaching kids to get in touch with their own subconscious, when they realize that their subconscious contains wisdom and knowledge they may not have had access to before, it gives them a strong sense of, hey, I'm more than I realized. They become more confident and more resilient. Now, parents can either help this process or hinder it. And I think this is really important to understand. In our society, many parents are anxious as well. And that anxiety translates to them being very careful with their children because they want the best for their children. That anxiety has developed the helicopter parent, the parent who monitors every little thing the child does to make sure they're doing it just right, because the parent wants the child to succeed. I recently heard a new term, a bulldozer parent. A bulldozer parent is a parent who clears the obstacles from in front of the child so they don't have to face obstacles, so they can just have smooth, easy sailing. What these parents don't realize, these helicopter parents and bulldozer parents, when they don't realize that they're hurting their child, when you don't allow your child to make their own decisions, or worse yet, when you clear the obstacles so they don't face any significant challenges, your child loses an opportunity to figure out their own strengths and develop resilience. When a child scrapes his or her knee and the parent runs over and says, oh, are you okay? You might get infected. That child is taught how to become anxious. When the child is told, it's fine, you know, go wash it off, you'll be fine, the child learns, hey, I can handle such situations. So I think one of the reasons, another reason we have kids are more anxious, is because the parental anxiety translates into developing anxious kids. One time I saw this young girl who was afraid of leaving the house and separating from her mom. And I taught her how to calm herself. I taught her how to use positive talk. She might have been all of 7 or 8 years old. And then one day, his mother and the child comes back, and the child had left the house without permission and played in the front yard for half an hour. And the mother in front of me yells at the child, "How could you do that? You might have been kidnapped." Why do you think this child developed anxiety? Because that's the parent's worry. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't be concerned that something bad could happen to your child, but you got to let your child fly. I see parents doing this with older teenagers, with 16 and 17 years old. And these are the kids who fall apart when they get to college because they don't know how to manage without their parents.
Do you think it's parents jump in and fix problems way too quickly instead of sitting down and helping a child fix it themselves? I remember as a parent, my kids would bring me, this tells you how old I am, doctor, a G.I. Joe, and the arm was off. I would automatically, because it's a dad job, is it not, to fix everything, go, here you go, it's perfect. Instead of saying, hey, this is what you need to do. You need to wrap that coil around here and then it'll snap back in, and give them a little bit of teaching moment instead of trying to be the ultimate fixer.
Correct. So the parent, there's a good parents. They want to help their child. And
Yeah.
it's much faster when you fix the G.I. Joe than teaching your child to do it. But if you have the patience, parent, and hopefully you can at least sometimes help the child through the problem rather than solve it for them, because remember, it's a learning opportunity. And if the child messes up fixing G.I. Joe, that's not bad. That's good. It was Thomas Alva Edison who said, "I did not fail 10,000 times. I just found 10,000 ways the light bulb doesn't work." It's part of the learning process. I also use this analogy. When you see a toddler learn to walk, you'll see them trip over, fall over, get up, walk again, trip, fall over. That tripping and falling over is part of the learning process. They're learning you can't walk this way. So nobody, can you imagine a parent says, "Well, I don't want you to trip, so I'll just hold your hand from now on when you're walking." That child will never learn to walk independently. So that's what parents of teens do when they try to fix everything. They don't let their child learn to handle themselves.
Do you think today's world, we talked about a little bit, is so much different than it was when we grew up? I think we're close to maybe the same generation. That there's just a whole different pile of issues that we didn't have back when I was growing up in the country in Southern Illinois, even though I was abused, but just the overwhelmingness of the media, and the anxiety and the news, and we hear everything like you said at the beginning. That does affect how we handle everything throughout the rest of our life, correct?
Correct. And yes, I think when we were growing up, walking to school by yourself was perfectly fine.
Oh,
Now
yeah.
parents are arrested when their child is allowed to walk by themselves without enough supervision by some do-gooder. Educators have figured out that phones are bad for education, and they want to take the phones away from the kids when they're in school. And many parents have objected, but I want to be able to get a hold of my kid in case of emergency. And the parents are objecting, whereas the phones are really a problem. The kids are sneaking using their phones instead of paying attention to the teaching. And so to change this in our teens, we as adults need to like change our attitude. But again, the poor parents are under the same idea as school shootings happen every day, everywhere. They don't. They're still, thank goodness, exceedingly rare. But the ones that have occurred are tragic, and they're in our face 24/7. So it's hard to keep, we're, as humans, we're built to react to badness and to protect ourselves, and that's what we're doing. But the badness is not as bad as it seems
Right.
with the media as it is.
When you wrote in chapter 4, you can ease your fears. Fears, I would imagine, is something that is huge with a teenager, is it not? And how prevalent and life-changing is what we think as adults, a simple divorce for a child? That's not simple for them, correct?
Correct. And if your child is afraid or anxious or angry, don't belittle it. For them, it's very real. And if you belittle it or say, oh, get over it, or it's not a big deal, the child feels like you're not listening to them, which is true, you're not. And they're less apt to even share their feelings with you. And to deal with fear, one of the discussions we often first have is this a real fear or an imaginary fear? And many kids are able to say, well, I know it's not real, but it's really scary, which is not contradictory to me. I can, and you all remember, you know, many of us remember being afraid of monsters, or even now as an adult, sometimes I might see a shadow and it's a little scary, right? But we know it's not real, but it's still scary. So I will talk to kids if it's a real fear, you're afraid somebody's going to break into your house and you live in a bad neighborhood, then you might want to go check the locks in the house before you go to bed and make sure their house alarm is on if you have one. But if it's a imaginary fear, you know, monster's going to come and kidnap me, or the house will burn down even though there are no fires around, then you deal with those kind of fears in an imaginary way. You could use imagery. You can imagine a superhero protecting you and from the kidnappers that are never going to show up, or the monster. You can use, oh, monster spray is a great thing. This is for somewhat younger kids, but a monster spray is a great thing to spray around the house to prevent monsters from showing up.
So, the best way to handle a child that seems to be fear infested is to do what? Talk through it with them,
So first,
explain it with them.
listen to them, find out what their fear is and what it is, and then address it and figure out a way together. So, for example, one boy, again, this was 9-year-old or so, didn't want to go to the bathroom by himself, or didn't want to close the door in the bathroom when he went, and the parents kept yelling at him to do so. And then I asked him, "What's the problem with the bathroom?" "I'm afraid of monsters." So I gave him monster spray. A 13-year-old girl was afraid of the fires in California, and she was afraid that she wouldn't get her favorite things out of the house in time. So she packed a basket with all of her favorite things and put in the trunk of the car, and she put out little carry cases for her kittens that she left near the front of the house so she could take the kittens out if necessary, and then she wasn't afraid of that anymore. So you need to talk to your child, find out what the fear is about, and address it.
What about nightmares?
Nightmares, first of all, I reframe by saying to the children, nightmares are, especially if they're recurrent nightmares, are there for a reason. And it's not a bad reason. They're trying to convey a message to you.
Okay.
So one way to work through a nightmare is to imagine having a nightmare in the daytime and dreaming it till the end. See what happens at the end. And typically some good thing happens at the end. And then the nightmare stops, doesn't recur. Another really cool thing about nightmares is that they're the body's own way of doing therapy, or the mind's own way of doing therapy. So they did a study with people with PTSD, and then they reactivated the PTSD by showing them a movie about what had bothered them. And then they had them go to sleep, or they followed them for the next month. And during sleep, they would wake them up several times to see what they were dreaming about for a month. And half the people dreamed about their PTSD, and half didn't. A year later, those who had dreamed about the PTSD no longer had PTSD. The ones who didn't dream about it still had it. What does that show you? It shows you that dreams are a way of working out some of your mental health issues. So if you're having a nightmare, I'll tell the child, well, that's a good thing. You're working things out. So this is called reframing. So it's not as scary anymore. It's something you can actually accept.
It's called reframing.
When you look at something in a different way, that makes you feel better about it. So instead of being scared by the nightmare, you can say, oh, it's helping me. I'm going to get better.
Wow, that's awesome. Towards the end of the book, because our time's running out, this has been fascinating. You talk about 10 tools that you recommend teenagers know about. Maybe having their emotional and mental tool belt to know and use. Are you after they read this book, wanting them to have them have those tools, and I want you to explain a few of them to us tonight. Don't explain all of them because I want people to buy the book. Don't let all the cats out of the bag. But what's some of the tools that they need to have? And is that the reason towards the end of the book you say, "Hey, wait, I want to give you this so you can be able to work through this."
Well, we already talked about three of them: positive talk, imagery to calm yourself down, and listen to yourself. We didn't talk about how to talk to your subconscious, so let's talk about that a bit.
Okay.
So, the subconscious is a quiet voice. So when you quiet your mind, you're more apt to hear it. And you can quiet your mind by imagining going to a relaxing place, quiet your mind by taking a walk out in nature, you quiet your mind by taking a warm bath and just calming your thinking. All those things will allow the subconscious to speak. You can actually ask yourself a question before a walk, and an answer can come to you during the walk. Or in Guatemala, they have what's called a worry doll. It's a very small doll that the kids make. And you take this worry doll, you tell it what your worry is, put it under your pillow, and the next morning you'll have an answer from the doll. Those are ways of tapping into your subconscious. And a fourth cool tool is the idea of a dial. So you can use a dial for many things, oftentimes to deal with discomfort. So if you are dealing with, or your child is dealing with chronic pain or pain that's happened acutely, you can imagine a dial. If you turn it one way, the pain gets worse. If you turn it the other way, the pain improves. And if you're really gifted at imagery, your pain could virtually resolve, depending on how good you are at this. And so you turn the dial slowly. The reason it's sometimes good to turn up the pain is that it shows you have control over it. But you can use the same dial to help with sleep. You turn it one way, you get more awake. Turn it the other way, you get drowsier. Or you can use a similar dial to get comfortable. One way more comfortable, one way less comfortable. So, or I have people who have something called misophonia. Misophonia is that loud sounds or sounds bother them. Sounds of chewing can really bother them, or it's like somebody scratching on the chalkboard. But just regular chewing or breathing can really bother them. And so they can use a dial to turn down the volume of those noises, and that helps some children.
So this is tips, techniques that you place up here and tell yourself that, hey, my pain, I'm going to tone that down right now.
Correct.
I do have somewhat control of what I'm going to experience, and that works.
And you can show the control by increasing your pain, then it really it shows you, yeah, you have control, which is a good thing.
And
Improves
you've
resilience.
written a book, and I know we're not here to talk about that book, but I may buy it. The hypnosis.
Yeah.
How relevant is hypnosis with children? And how successful has that been with children that need that? And does all children need it, or just certain ones that have gone through certain things?
So when you say hypnosis, we should first define hypnosis is using your imagination to help yourself. It's
Okay.
not mind control.
Okay.
It's not sleep. And it's not unusual. We all do hypnosis all the time. When you drive down the highway and said, "How did I get here?" you've been in hypnosis. Part of your mind has been driving. Part of your mind is making a plan, what you're going to do for the rest of the day. When you're in a boring lecture and you start daydreaming, that's hypnosis. So hypnosis is very successful in children. Adults, some of them doubt it. You have to work through the baggage of, is it what I saw in the movies? It's not. Kids haven't been exposed to that, so they just dive into it. A lot of the things we've talked about are hypnotic suggestion. The dial is hypnotic suggestion. The imagery of a relaxing place is hypnotic because it involves your imagination. I just didn't use that word in describing it. And there was a reason I didn't use the word, because some people are scared of hypnosis. I don't want them to not to be able to use these tools because of just the word. But the kids I've treated with hypnosis, as long as the child is interested, and that's key, because all hypnosis is self-hypnosis, as long as the child is interested, virtually always they improve at least a bit, sometimes an awful lot.
So it's self-hypnosis. It's not
It's
medically
all
administered
hypnosis.
in a room with a dark cloud, dark room and candles and your real soft voice. It's a self-hypnosis technique that you help with.
All hypnosis is self-hypnosis. Even the hypnosis with a dark room, you're still doing it to yourself. You listen to somebody else telling you to do things, but you're doing it for yourself.
Right.
Just like all education is self-education. You can have a teacher up there teaching, but if you don't take it in, you don't learn anything.
That's fascinating. Fantastic. Hold up your book one more time before we go. I want everybody to see this. This is a great book. And doctor, this is a book that you recommend the teens read themselves, correct?
Yes, the chapters are written. There's a short vignette, and there's like 5 to 10 tools within each chapter that teens can use. And if they only read one tool and use it, their life is better. Every chapter has a section, teen to teen section, where other teens who actually read this book suggest how to their compatriots what they can do. And then every chapter ends with a page for parents, how parents can help with particular issues. Like we talked about earlier, let your child handle their own struggles and help them grow rather than fix things for them.
Okay, I have a lot of listeners that are on tonight around the world that are counselors, that are teachers, that are therapists, that are advocacy center personnel. Is this something that would be good to have on their shelf too, to find out what's the best way to handle some of their clients that are walking in or some of their students that's walking into their classrooms?
I think so. I think again, there's these tools anybody can teach them to the teens. I'd like the teens to be able to read it for themselves to pick out
Yes.
what's most relevant for themselves. But we all know teens don't read these days, unfortunately, or many don't read. So yes, I think anybody involved with children could benefit. But I also want to emphasize, as I said earlier, many of the tools here apply throughout life. So I've had adults read this book and said, "Oh, I learned things here that I can apply to my own life." And it's already benefited me.
What happens if I'm counseling or talking with a 13, 14-year-old child? Would this be something that I could gift to that child and say, hey, we're going to talk about chapter 4 next week. Read this, write down your thoughts, think it over, and I want to discuss it with you and see what you think. Would that be a good tool for me to be able to have to use?
Absolutely. This book was written over a period of 2 years, and I can tell you,
Wow.
it just came out. It's just start coming out March 4th. It'll be available. I've been using individual chapters because I have them since I wrote them, and I've been giving them to my patients to read just that way.
So March 4th is the release date. So I got an early copy of this.
You did, thanks to
Okay,
this
wonderful.
interview.
Or can you pre-sell? I mean, can you pre-buy right now?
You can pre-order, but
Pre-order?
delivery is March 4th, and I
Okay, so
encourage
you
you
can
to
get
do
on
that.
Amazon right now and put this in your cart and go ahead and purchase it, and it'll be sent out just as
Yes,
soon as it's printed off.
exactly right. Well, it's printed, it has to be distributed.
Right. Well, doctor, I tell you what, I appreciate so much you being on, and hold the book up one more time. I really personally recommend this book for every parent, every grandparent that wants to help. I'd like to even maybe have you on again because I want to talk about some other things that we didn't get to. But there it is, The Life Guide for Teens by Ron. But his first name's pronounced Ron, but it's R-A-N, Anbar,
Correct.
Anbarmd. You will want to purchase this book and have it ready by the first week of March. When you get it, you will have it read and be able to help your children and give it to them, maybe as a gift to be able to have just around the house and say, hey, if you want something to read, read this. And it's really well written with a lot of awesome illustrations and some good tools. And I love that each chapter has things that you can do. It tells you, hey, this is what we talked about, but this is some tools that you're able to use. So it applies the truths that you've given them.
I'm really excited about the illustrations. I got to use them because it's a book for teenagers, but I think illustrations are really fun to have in any book.
Yeah, I like a book with a picture. I always enjoy that. They're great, and it brings home the point of what that chapter is all about. Anything else you want to share before? If somebody wants to get in touch with you to ask you a question, do you have availability? You have a website that you'd like to share?
I have a website. You can go to Dr. Anbar, DRANB as in boy, AR.com. DrAnbar.com is another link to the book, but also a lot of information about hypnosis and counseling. And also, you can contact me through that website.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Doctor, for being with us. I will let Adrian know that if you're into have an interest of being back on, I would love to have you back on again so we can talk to another deeper level.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Good luck on that kickoff of that book, and hopefully it's going to hit the New York Times bestseller. We'll see what we can do to help you with that.
Appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for being with us. Like we do each and every week on here, I always like to let you know, and I know Dr. Ambar feels the same way, that no matter what you've gone through, no matter what you've experienced, no matter what you're going to face tomorrow, I just want to let you know, and if you want to huddle up with me here, I'll be glad to tell you. Don't give up. You have the strength inside of you to be able to get through it. And there's always, always, no matter how dark it is outside, there's always hope. Because I promise you, it's going to get a little bit darker here in Houston. But I promise you that tomorrow morning, the sun's coming up again. It may be foggy, but that's not going to last forever. The sun will come up just like your problems. And if you have it within you, you have that strength. Let yourself know there's always hope. Join us right here next week for another live edition from Houston, Texas, of Breaking the Silence. God bless. Have an awesome, awesome week. And check out this book. I promise you, you won't be disappointed. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.